I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a second congressional sex tape scandal. This one, though, allegedly involving the former staffer of a Republican Washington congressman. Also, two more Let's Go Washington initiatives are being turned in today. And while we're at it, an update on the woman who crossed out voter signatures at Costco, plus my 2024 political predictions, that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. It is our final live show of the year. That doesn't mean we're not going to have shows next week. We'll get to that coming up later. We got a special treat for you next week to get your brain in gear ahead of the legislative session. So I guess since it's our final live show of the year, I mean, we might as well talk about just another congressional sex scandal, because I guess they're just happening all the time. But I mean, we wouldn't be very Undivided if we talked about a sex tape scandal involving the staffer of a Democratic congressman and didn't talk about a alleged sex tape scandal involving the former staffer of a Republican congressman from our state. So this came out yesterday in Semaphore, which is sort of an inside the Beltway political coverage website. It says U.S. House quietly investigated separate sex tape scandal. The high-profile Senate sex scandal that rocked Washington, D.C. this month was, in fact, the second time in less than 2 years that sexually explicit videos filmed in the U.S. Capitol prompted an investigation. A spokesperson for Representative Dan Newhouse of Washington confirmed that reports of, quote, purported unbecoming behavior by a senior staffer in their office triggered an investigation last year. They added that no conclusive evidence was found. The report goes on to say, one thing that is clear, however, there is in fact a second set of Capitol sex videos which circulated on Snapchat last year. The article goes on to say, they were featured in the Snapchat story of a user going by Adam J., with the handle AnnJackson2019, according to the recordings viewed by Semaphore, which were provided by a source. Man, as a reporter, that's rock bottom when you gotta watch people's sex tapes. One of the videos watched by Semaphore featured a man masturbating inside a House office building, which was identifiable by standard Capitol House furniture and carpeting. The desk at which the videographer performed, that's a very nice way of saying, like, it's a video of a guy masturbating at his desk, and it says, the desk at which the videographer performed, okay, also held a branded congressional mouse pad. A screenshot of a second video obtained by Semaphore shows two men engaged in a sex act in an office setting. The participants' faces are not visible in any of the material viewed by Semaphore. After the video surfaced, Newhouse's office was told that a suspected participant was a member of their staff. So Semaphore doesn't name the staff member. We're not going to name the staff member at this time either, although we are running this story down with our sources to try to get to the bottom of what the videos depicted, where they were in the U.S. Capitol. And my understanding of the situation is this particular staffer left their post as the investigation was being conducted, and then there was no conclusive evidence turned up in the course of that investigation, and he wasn't a staffer there anymore anyway. That being said, there seems to be in this article clearly video that exists, clearly reason to believe that it is video that was taken within the office of Congressman Dan Newhouse, that when the congressman found out about it, he made sure that there was an investigation into it, which is good. That's what we want to see. Just like the Democratic senator who fired his staffer immediately once they found out that he'd had sex in a Senate hearing room. But this is just wild stuff. It's like, look, I'm not saying no other Americans have ever had sex in their office or done something untoward, but we're talking about Congress, Senate hearing room. We're talking about a congressman's, I don't know if it's his office personally or in the office area. I mean, it is obviously very unbecoming of the People's House and of Congress and of the activities that we expect there. And it also is apparently not relegated to the staffers of just one political party. But I am happy to see that it was at least investigated. Thankfully, this person isn't a staffer anymore. I will tell you, though, this is probably not the last that we're going to discuss this. We want to run this down with our sources, get a little bit more information, and then we'll come back to this story, since it does have a local tie to Congressman Dan Newhouse. Ridiculous stuff. All right, moving on. Today, big day. Numbers 4 and 5 of the Let's Go Washington initiatives, so 4 and 5 of 6, are going to be turned in this afternoon. And they're two good ones. No income tax, the initiative that would help make sure that state, counties, cities, and other local jurisdictions do not impose an income tax. And the reason why Initiative 2111 was even put forth, because in our state constitution, you can't have a graduated income tax. You could have a flat income tax if you wanted. This would say no income tax in Washington state. And it's because you see Democrats taking little steps toward trying to get to an income tax. You saw it with the tax on capital gains, which capital gains is income. That is income. Washington's the only state in the entire union that says that, oh, that's an excise tax, not an income tax, which, by the way, the second initiative being turned in today, what would it do? It is Initiative 2109, and it would repeal the illegal tax on capital gains. So you have two anti-tax initiatives that have well over the necessary number of signatures that are being turned in today. I will say that cap and gains has about 420,000 signatures, and the anti-income tax initiative has 440,000 signatures, which, like, you need 400,000 is more than enough. So these are getting a lot of signatures, and that's very good. So that'll make 5 at the end of the day today. And there's one outstanding. If you've been keeping track, the last one that needs to be turned in before the end of the year, or else it's kaput, is Initiative 2124, which would allow you to opt out of the state-run long-term care coverage. It continues to baffle me that this is the one that's last and that's sort of trailed in signatures, because, man, I mean, from the very beginning of the long-term care program in Washington state, it's been a debacle. I mean, you're getting this long-term care coverage that you might not even utilize later on in life. It gives you a benefit of, you know, pay into it your entire working career. You might get a benefit of up to $30,000 if you need long-term care later on in life. But if you move out of Washington state, you don't get it, even though you paid into it your entire life. And there were all these other kinks in the program. There's a question about whether the program's even going to be solvent. So this thing, it would make it optional. And I think once it's made optional, the program just has to go away, because it will not be solvent. So we will see whether Initiative 2124 has the necessary number of signatures to be turned in by the end of the year. Stay tuned. But 5 for 6, man, that ain't bad. That's good stuff. Oh, Democrats, how's your voter intimidation campaign going? Not so well? Oh, what a shame. What a shame. Speaking of voter intimidation, I do want to update you on the story we broke on Monday's show, because yours truly, I'm so good at covering the news. I'm there before the news even happens. Just in the right place, right time. So, of course, I told you about my Sunday Costco run, which was interrupted by someone trying to destroy democracy. A lady, there were signature gatherers there for these initiatives, and she allegedly grabbed a pen, you know, oh, maybe I'm going to sign this, and then put a big X through one of the initiatives, which is a gross misdemeanor. We'll show you the picture again here of the woman that the signature gatherer caught a glimpse of her. Her neighbors snitched her out pretty quick, I will say. We posted her picture like, somebody knows this woman. And her neighbors ratted her out pretty fast. We got her name. We got her address. We're not going to release it yet, because we were trying to reach out to the Issaquah Police Department to see, hey, where does this stand? Because Issaquah Police, Costco called them to the scene to get the signature gatherers to leave, not necessarily about the woman. So Nicole had been trying for days, and maybe we'll give them the benefit of the doubt because it's the holiday season. It's not a big police department, but it was a struggle to get rid of, to get in touch with Issaquah PD. And then we finally got a response from the Issaquah police chief, Paula Schwan, and it was a very brief, kind of odd response. She said, the interaction and reported information is currently under investigation, and we have no comment at this time. And I thought, no comment. We had just sort of asked, hey, can you characterize the nature of the call that you got to 911 from Costco? Can you tell us whether the woman is also being investigated or just the signature gatherers? And so I kind of pushed back in an email. I said, hey, can you give us a little bit more here? And the chief did respond and say, she just responded a few minutes ago, no law enforcement action was taken at the scene. However, they are investigating the woman's actions, which is good. And we did, in the interest of transparency, give the police department the woman's name and address. Not because I'm a snitch, but because she did something wrong in trying to disenfranchise Washington voters. And let's be honest, if I had information on any other suspect that a picture was put out, like, hey, do you know the guy who committed this armed robbery? Do you know the guy in the stolen car? And I was like, yeah, actually, I do. I would give him a name too, so.
I do think that makes you a snitch, though.
Is it a snitch? She did it in broad daylight.
Well, I mean, when you know the name.
I'm a snitch for justice.
That's fair.
Snitch for justice. But they have no excuse now. They have no excuse. They know what she did. They have her name. They have her address. It's a gross misdemeanor. And honestly, I continue to be so disappointed by Democrats staying silent on this. I haven't seen anything from Steve Hobbs on it yet, the Secretary of State, which about any of the intimidation efforts, any of the intimidation tactics by Democrats, which if the roles were reversed, Democrats would lose their ever-loving minds and 100% Secretary Hobbs would say something. He said something in 2022 when these rogue Republican volunteers were putting signs by ballot drop boxes saying they were under surveillance, which I also thought was intimidating. And his office said something about that, rightfully so. So did other county secretaries of state, or what do they call them at the county level? An auditor. And now it's like all this going on, Democrats running a snitch line supported by the ACLU and by progressive groups and nothing for all of this. Even when I go to Costco and I've got like black and white evidence of, I mean, this is no different than someone I said, ripping apart 8 ballots. Do you think if a right wing crazy person ripped apart 8 ballots, the Secretary of State wouldn't say anything about it? Come on, Steve. Can I call you Steven? Come on. Honorable Secretary Hobbs, let's say something about this. We all just want voters not to be disenfranchised, for elections people not to be harassed. I mean, this is just, it's ridiculous how partisan things become. Where it's like, you can't look at that and be like, hey guys, this has gotten out of control. And if you're a member of their party in elected office statewide, you got to say something about that. Okay. I want to move up to the city of Everett. Oh, and also, 5 for 6 initiatives is so good. I'm so excited. Okay. Oh, they're going to lose it today, too. Democrats about the capital gains repeal. They're going to lose that. Oh,
Merry
trying
Christmas.
To help rich people. Scrooge. The Grinch. Anyway, okay. Moving up to the city of Everett. We teased this on the show yesterday that the Everett City Council was about to vote on what I think is a very, very common sense, good public safety measure, which is when you have repeat offenders who are repeatedly committing public nuisance crimes. We saw this in the city of Marysville as well, that you got to have a mandatory sentence and put them in jail a little bit. Because you got to get them off the streets. If they are continually doing the same kind of things that are eroding the quality of life for law-abiding, tax-paying citizens, then yeah, we got to have some sort of mandatory minimum in there just to get them off the streets. So I'm happy to report this did pass in the city of Everett. There was still some disagreement on the Everett City Council, but Mayor Cassie Franklin, who I've been very complimentary of for coming around, come to Jesus on criminal justice, she explained why she is in support of this ordinance.
I know there's a lot of folks that talked about punishment is not the way out, and I totally agree. I am punishment is not the way to stop behavior. I see something like this as a tool to break a cycle, to give somebody, give the victims reprieve from the repeat offending that's happening and the repeat victimization, and also hopefully that individual enough time and the opportunity to take a different path, or if they're addicted, to get off of that. And as a person who has a family member on the streets struggling with addiction, I support this.
Yeah, I support it too. Amen, sister. I was a little worried when she started off saying, you know, punishment does not stop this, but then she kind of elaborated. Because I don't believe that just the act of throwing someone in jail stops maybe a lifetime of substance abuse or whatever the underlying reason is that they might be continually committing these crimes. I don't believe that either. But it doesn't hurt, okay? It's not going to hurt. And it protects all of us from them. And then this is the kind of the argument before I get to this next council member who's unhinged. This is kind of the argument with prison where people are like, well, prison doesn't rehabilitate people. Okay, we'll make prison rehabilitate people. Why are you failing then? Make prison better. Make the environment in prison, the programs that they're offered, the treatment that they get, make it better so it does rehabilitate them while they're serving their time. Easy. Okay? I sounded like Jay Inslee there. Okay? Okay? All right. Council member Mary Fossey. What are you talking about? So she was opposed to this. She did vote no. I think she was always going to vote no, although during the meeting she was trying to repeatedly amend it and soften the language, etc. But there was a prosecuting attorney who was testifying in favor of this and how it kind of might be applied. And Councilmember Mary Fossey just does not like the idea of jail time for crimes that she just does not think are a big deal.
Some of these crimes, though, are like loitering. I mean, these aren't felony level crimes, correct?
So they used to be, some of them.
But they're not. This is loitering.
For the purposes of drug-related activity.
Yeah, and car prowls. And if the solution is like, well, we want to put them in there because we want to have, you know, adequate punishment for these people that are, car prowling, how expensive that is. Somebody in there, I mean, like, you could have compensated the victim by paying their rent or their mortgage for that month.
What? What are you talking about? So what you would like to do is, if someone commits a crime that costs someone money, you know, breaks a window, steals something from them, rather than hold that person accountable, you're going to take taxpayer money and give it to the victim? And then what happens to the person who did it? They're like, oh, taxpayers cover, like, foot the bill for my criminal conduct? What are you, how is this woman on in any sort of rulemaking position? And this kind of fits into the playbook we saw with police pursuits in Olympia, where they were like, oh, it's just motor vehicle theft. It's just property. So disconnected from the reality of why people are stealing cars, of what they go on to do with those cars. It's not just a property crime, of the people they go on to kill using those cars. Oh, it's just property. No, it's not. And for her to be like, oh, it's just, you know, loitering. This isn't a kid who's, you know, playing hooky from school and they've got their skateboard and they're loitering around a gas station. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about habitual drug users who are congregating in areas for the purpose of buying and or selling drugs. That's what we're talking about here. And people who are not doing it once, but doing it so many times without consequence that the city is now saying, hey, we got to put a mandatory sentence in there of at least 30 days in jail just to keep them off the streets. And then how quick some of these people are, some of these progressives, you know, pro-criminal, anti-police people, to dismiss and to sort of sacrifice other people's belongings. It's like, oh, it's just a vehicle prowl. Like, you'll get over it. No, I won't get over it. Yes, I want them to go to jail. You don't get to, like, why are you telling me how upset I should be by someone stealing my car, by someone breaking in my window to rummage through my belongings? How dare you? Ridiculous. So Everett, thank you for the sanity, though. Thank you for the sanity in passing this. And more we're going to start to see cities take actions like this because, you know, you have this hands-off approach to drug offenses, this hands-off approach to violent crime that is really out of the control of some of these local jurisdictions. You know, those are county-level decisions, state-level decisions. And so they're trying to do what they can to take what really is. You're talking about, when you look at the criminal infrastructure, especially misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors, it's a small number of people that account for most of the crime. You see that. So yeah, let's throw the book at them. Let's throw the book at them. Let's make our communities better. Let's protect law-abiding taxpayer-paying citizens. And the city of Everett, love it. Because that's not some sort of right-wing, you know, stronghold up there. These are progressives. And they did something that is actually progress. Actually progress. Well done. All right, coming up next, Washington State gets a lesson in transparency from Oregon. And I really hope maybe we can learn from that lesson. What do you think? Probably not, but we'll talk about it anyway. I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, down 37 pounds. So glad I did this for myself a year ago. Now I'm on the maintenance period and I love it. I don't feel like I'm on some sort of lifelong miserable diet where you can really enjoy life and you can make sure that you stay on track. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, no drugs or injections. They teach you what to eat in the right portions and how to maintain the weight loss for life. So do something nice for yourself in the new year. 2024, new year, new you. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Nicole's just staring at me. Why are you like
thinking
this?
You should have thinking. Shared your reel from your dinner the other night. Is that really a portion that they endorse?
Yeah. Well, look, I'm on maintenance. So not on maintenance, it's not about portions, which is nice. It's like, yeah, you can have some days where you go out to eat, where you enjoy some delicious Chinese food. I had some fried rice. I had some garlic beans. I had some pork. I had a pork bun. I had this, what do you call it? Fried dumpling stuffed full of shrimp. I mean, we killed 30 shrimp for that thing. There was like 30 shrimp. Poor shrimp lost their lives for that one dumpling. Delicious. Anyway, I'm just saying that it's like, you know, some of these whatever diets, you've got to buy their little packaged meals and then you're stuck with them for life. And then half your life is miserable eating these little packaged meals. It's not the case. So, am I done?
Yeah.
Okay. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation. And you can do the whole program virtually, no matter where you live. Even if you live down in Oregon, which has just, Portland, Oregon has just shot down the state's signature climate program. Why can't this be happening here? Although voters are going to shoot down the Climate Commitment Act in Washington State in 2024. Mark my word. However, so the reason that the court... what is being characterized as delivered a blow to the climate protection program in Oregon is because the state wasn't transparent about it. Does that sound familiar? You look at the Climate Commitment Act in Washington State, Governor Jay Inslee has told how many lies about it, how many lies about what it will do. We have a whistleblower who is saying he made predictions about what the Climate Commitment Act would do to gas prices. He was basically told, zip your lip. So now down in Oregon, this is an article from the Seattle Times. Oregon court strikes down state climate program, rules in favor of utilities and industry. It says an Oregon court on Wednesday delivered a blow to Oregon's signature climate protection program, invalidating it over the state's failure to follow rulemaking requirements. The state acknowledged that the notice it submitted did not include an explicit statement about additional federal requirements. The state said it, quote, this gets me, substantially complied with state rules by posting the notice of proposed rulemaking on its website, sending it to over 20,000 recipients, and conducting 18 months of public outreach. But the court said substantial compliance is not sufficient. The statute requires actual compliance.
And that was in the Oregonian, but
in the Oregon,
but
Oregonian,
republished in Seattle Times. Seattle. So.
And isn't that funny, though? It's like the court's like, hey, so the state has all these requirements that it was... that it had to meet in terms of public notice and transparency around its version of our Climate Commitment Act, essentially. And they knew that they hadn't complied with that transparency, those requirements fully. They knew it. They told the court, we substantially complied. And the court said, yeah, but that substantial compliance is not full compliance. Partial transparency is not full transparency. And so the court in Oregon said, it's done. Because you didn't do what you knew you had to do. So it says that the program in Oregon mandates ever-increasing cuts in emissions from the state's natural gas utility suppliers of gas, diesel, kerosene, and propane. Oregon's three gas utilities and an oil industry group sued over this, challenged the program's rules to try to block it. It says the Oregon Court of Appeals found that the Environmental Quality Commission, the policy and rulemaking board for the state's Department of Environmental Quality, did not meet heightened disclosure requirements. The requirements come into play when the state adopts rules that apply to industries that must obtain a so-called Title V air permit. So this is, I mean, so many shades of what's happening in Washington. Why can't we get something like that to nullify the Climate Commitment Act here? I mean, we have the initiative, which will eventually nullify it in November. But at the same time that this court, and thankfully, this court in Oregon understood that, and understood that, you know, partial transparency is not full transparency. Substantial compliance is not full compliance. Because in Washington State, with the courts, we're seeing the exact opposite here. And this is going to be the topic of Sundays with Subscribers this week. It is a subject I am very passionate about. As you know, Washington state lawmakers have been trying to get around the Public Records Act that you passed in 1972 for years. Lawmakers on both sides tried to exempt themselves from the release of public records. And then you had news organizations sue. You had people fight back over it. We thought that fight was done. And then this time last year, Democrats in Olympia are like, we're using something called legislative privilege, and we're going to hide documents from you again. And we're a single-party rule, and we can do whatever we want, and we don't care about being transparent to the public, which is essentially what they said. And so you had the Washington Coalition for Open Government that sued, really, I mean, it sued state legislators, but it's Democrats who are doing this. Democrats are the only ones who've been utilizing what really is a misinterpretation of legislative privilege. So they took that to court, and what happened? The court sided with lawmakers, which is wild. I cannot understand their legal interpretation of legislative privilege that would allow them to side with these Democratic lawmakers to say, yeah, keep just hiding records at whim from the people you serve. You choose which records you hide. You're not really bound by anything. So anyway, coming up on the Sunday show, we're going to be joined by Joan Mell. She's an attorney for the Washington Coalition for Open Government. And man, is she passionate about this issue.
What's at stake here?
Democracy.
Oh, I love that. That's deep.
I am adamant that there was a death knell on democracy when these decisions came down, even when it was sought, you know, just when the whole idea was formulated that we need to do this and we're going to go to bat against the people. I mean, how undemocratic party is it mm-hmm. even? I mean, I know it's not supposed to be partisan, and it isn't a partisan issue. Both sides can play this game.
Yeah.
But the ones who tout inclusivity and acceptance and, you know, we're doing good things for people, well, then why won't you show it to us? Yeah. Tell us what you're doing.
What are you hiding?
What do you need to hide? And it's absolutely a power thing. It's a desire to be able to not be questioned. And that is the death knell of democracy. If you can't tolerate being put to task for what you've expressed, then you don't deserve to be in office. Get out and get on down the road. We'll find somebody who's got the ability to say, I made this policy choice and it was hard and it sucked, but I had to do it and this is why. And if you can't do that, get out. Yeah. But don't browbeat us into believing you know what's best for us. Don't do it.
Oh, Joan Mell. I loved her. I was sitting here like, you're my new best friend. She's just great. Again, the attorney for the Washington Coalition for Open Government. She's been the one trying to fight against lawmakers. Right now, it's Democrats. At one time, it was Republicans, too, but not anymore. It's Democrats drunk on a trifecta in Olympia who are trying to withhold records from you, which is going to become very, very interesting in the new legislative session. With all this stuff going on, with the initiatives to the legislature, you don't think that they're going to have private conversations about how to get rid of those, and then they're going to use legislative privilege to black out documents so we can't tell you about it? Of course they are. They're completely emboldened. They don't think there's any check on their power, and right now they're kind of right, because even the courts are siding with them. So Joan Mell is going to be joining us on Sundays with subscribers. Also on the Sunday show this week, we're going to talk about this AI task force. A Republican state representative, Travis Couture, he's working with Attorney General Bob Ferguson to set up a task force looking into how the government should be regulating artificial intelligence. That has drawn the ire of some conservatives who don't want anyone working with Bob Ferguson on AI. So we're going to have two great conversations coming up for you on the Sunday show. Sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. It'd be a great Christmas gift for us, for you to become a subscriber to Undivided. All right. Coming up next, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal has made some 2024 predictions. So I'm going to read her predictions and then I'm going to give you my own. But first, if you're looking to save some money in the new year, maybe you need to take another look at your insurance anyway. Please make some time in the new year to do the First Mark Challenge. I'll tell you what, it's one of the best things Mike and I have done for ourselves financially and our household as a couple. It has taken so much stress off our plate to know we have a local company that's been in the insurance business for a long time working for us to make sure we have the best insurance we can have and to make sure we have insurance at the right price. You know, when Mike and I started the First Mark Challenge, we brought all our insurance together. We said, hey, we're getting married. Here's what we have. We need more insurance. We know we're underinsured. They got us better insurance for the same price, which is a no brainer. And I've heard from some of you who are saving hundreds of dollars a month on your insurance needs by going through First Mark, and you never pay him a dime. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark. He says price does matter when looking at your insurance, but so do a number of other issues.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, 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 right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah, yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't, okay? No. Yeah, it's not going to be done in 15 minutes or less, but you're not going to get the best product by going with a big box company that says that they can look at all your insurance needs and come back with a quote in 15 minutes. That's ridiculous. So go with a local company that you never have to pay for their services that can help you get the right insurance at the right price. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. You see how I'm creating jingles for all of our sponsors this week?
Oh, yes.
Because
I'm
in a singing mood.
Okay.
You always judge me when I sing on the show.
No.
It's not my fault. I'm a happy person and I love my job. Okay?
Fair.
Okay, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal has put out her list of 2024 predictions, and boy, are they dark. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. I put this in Unbelievable because her predictions are, in fact, unbelievable. And she tweeted them out. What I think is funny, though, is she typed them like in the notes section on her iPhone.
I know.
And then just kind of screen grabbed them.
Yep.
And then tweeted them out. So let's see.
Why not just tweet them? It's very bizarre.
I don't know. Maybe it's keep an old on, person thing. She's not really that old though. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, let's read her 2024 predictions, shall we? GOP tries and fails to pass a nationwide abortion ban. Well, I mean, I'm hoping they don't do that. I don't think they will. And I sure as heck hope the GOP isn't dumb enough in an important election year to try to push through an issue that is so deeply unpopular with key segments of the electorate. All right. CEOs give themselves massive raises while workers struggle. Hey, that's not out of the realm of possibility. Another Clarence Thomas scandal drops. That's kind of random. She really wants there to be another Clarence Thomas scandal.
I guess.
The last one didn't get the outcome that she really wanted. MAGA Republicans refuse to reform the immigration system.
She just wanted to throw in a MAGA.
Got to get one of those in. Which MAGA. Also, let's not forget that when Democrats had full control, they still didn't give protections for Dreamers because they wanted to continue to use Dreamers as political pawns. Mm-hmm. So I digress. Bayhive and Swifties join forces to get out the vote. I could actually see that happen. Bayhive is the Beyonce hive, right?
Right.
The queen bee.
And the Swifties.
Wait, can't our viewers be the Bayhive?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that's Bayhive. Very, she assumes they'd all vote for her.
Yeah, that's
her
true.
Her party, I guess.
Swifties probably would, but Bayhive, anyone with that much money, they're not voting for Democrats. Well, they might say they are.
Swifties can't even vote yet, most of them.
That's true. That's also true.
I mean, there are some older ones that can.
Very, very true. So I thought, Nicole, that I would go ahead and issue some of my own 2024 political predictions, and mine are serious, and I anticipate at the end of next year that all of these will have come true. So I went ahead and typed them into my notes section on my iPhone, just so you could go ahead and read them clearly. Gavin Newsom replaces Joe Biden as the 2024 Democratic nominee. That's going to happen. Top of my list.
I would say so as well.
This one's a little dark. Terror attack by someone who came into the U.S. through the southern border. I feel pretty strongly about that.
Unfortunately.
Pretty sure that's going to happen. Voters pass 4 of 6 of the Let's Go Washington initiatives. Now, you might be wondering, Brandy, 4 of 6? What do you mean 4 of 6? It's because I have faith that the legislature is going to adopt the police pursuit initiative, so okay. It won't go to voters. And then I also have deep, deep faith that Attorney General Bob Ferguson and Governor Jay Inslee will collude to find some way to get the cap and trade repeal initiative disqualified.
Okay.
So deal. 4 of 6.
I like it.
All right. Nikki Haley wins the presidency and Democrats claim the election was stolen. See, that's a bold
double
prediction.
Whammy right
it's
there.
A bold prediction. You want another one? Dave Reichert wins the governor's office and Democrats claim the election was stolen. Mark my words. At least
I'm pretty confident in most of those.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to ask you guys how you're feeling about the new year. And look, besides, you know, the terror attack prediction and all that stuff, I feel pretty good about 2024. From a political way, we had a weird, come on camera, Nicole.
Oh, come on camera.
Can we see you today?
Yeah, I was going to play that graphic.
Before we get to that.
Okay, got it.
It's been a weird up and down year for us.
Very much so.
We're coming up on 1 year since Dory died, mm-hmm. which we saw his... wife in here, and she brought us Christmas gifts, which was really nice.
Yes.
A book.
I know, so sweet.
So the year started off really terrible.
Really terrible.
Really, really terrible. And then, gosh, we went out of the country on vacation. Like, your life was upended overnight. And then mm-hmm. you came to work here, which yep. has been great. Yes. We don't hate each other yet, which, like, friends,
we love.
Working together.
We only love.
I got married.
Yeah.
My sister almost died.
It's quite the roller coaster.
Like, 11 of your relatives were hospitalized for serious incidents.
Yeah. And then I had this, like, epic travel year. I went to 5 different countries. I mean, it really was this epic year for me and travel. And I mean, there is a lot of good, and I'm very blessed. But, yeah, it was quite the emotional roller coaster.
It started off terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Really did. So I think for that reason, I have a lot of optimism about 2024 mm-hmm. personally. I'm like, things are going to be good. Going to start. No matter what, it's going to start off on a better mm-hmm. note, right?
Good momentum.
Good momentum. And then politically speaking, I feel so good about it. I'm going to be honest. I feel
hopeful.
So good about it. You also have a new, more moderate city council that starts on the mm-hmm. first of the year. That's an A+. Shama Sawant's gone, AA+. Mm-hmm. And then you have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Republicans in the mm-hmm. governor's race. You have all these initiatives. There's good stuff.
I think we just need people to pay attention.
Pay attention. Share this show with your friends.
Yes.
Say, hey, you need a little injection of common sense in your life.
Yes.
And then let's just keep the momentum going. The show's doing great.
Yes.
Done.
Feeling good. And wait till you see how generous people are in today's comments.
Generous?
Yes.
Are they complimenting me?
Well, there's some of that.
Okay. Because they weren't very nice to me
yesterday.
They're
just checking gifts.
Are they giving
us
money at us?
Yeah.
Is that because you guys were mean
Christmas
to me yesterday?
Gifts.
I'm excited. Okay, we'll get to comments. But first, in our daily subscriber show poll, I wanted to gauge your guys' feelings about the upcoming year. As 2023 winds down, rate your level of optimism about 2024. Are you not optimistic, somewhat optimistic, or very optimistic? This seems like a call you'd get from a polling firm. On a scale of 1 to 10, tell me what your level of optimism is. And I will say our folks are pretty split. A lot of people saying, somewhat optimistic is the primary answer. TJ says he's very optimistic because the Marxists now in power have grossly overplayed their hand. Barring a candidate from the ballot was the final straw and is something Putin would do. I expect other Marxist state governments will attempt the same. I do agree that that is something Putin would do. 100%. Like, we have a presidential election in Russia. I'm the only candidate yet again. Great. MP says, I have a part-time retirement job and a lot of my coworkers are fairly young. This sounds mean, but just listening to the level of indoctrination most of them display will suck the optimism out of anyone. Yeah. Leah says, this is a tough one. My own personal life, I feel optimistic, but the state of our country and our state, not optimistic at all. Miranda. Oh, hi, Miranda. Who's going to be joining us momentarily for an edition of Florida Report. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I always get excited when my family members comment on something. I'm like, that's kind of cute.
It's precious.
Miranda, I'm very optimistic because if 2023 taught me anything, it's that happiness, health, and success are balls that are in my court, and I know how to play this game better than any politician, changing and controlling what I can and making the best out of what I can't, focusing on my circle, friends, family, clients, and the community I live and work in, hoping for the best out of 2024 elections, but I know that isn't everything when it comes to true quality of life. Happy holidays and year to everyone. That is so nice.
Wow.
Well, deep stuff. I guess when you almost die, you get deep in the noggin.
Wow.
All right. Well, I'm
good to
regardless,
remember.
Yes. Regardless
I feel like
of whether
we should write that up and put that as our motto for next
like
year.
Like a Hallmark card.
Yeah.
Whether you're not optimistic or very optimistic, I obviously am wishing you all the best in 2024 as we all go down this crazy ride together. Okay. Before we get to today's edition of Florida Report, speaking of my sister, are you a small landlord? We'd be really interested, first and foremost, to hear from you about what you're dealing with, particularly if you're in Seattle or Tacoma. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, in addition to being a real estate agent, he is also a small landlord, and he's got units in Tacoma where these strict renter protections went into place, and he's sort of like, gosh, should I sell these things? And I'm sure there's a lot of other people in that boat. He said the outcome of this will probably be that more affordable rental units will be off the market.
Since 2019, Seattle has lost over 11,000 rental units.
Wow, yeah.
This is important. This is something, you know, like those are less rental units on the market. Majority of those, Brandy, they're not crappy little apartments. Mm-hmm. Those are single family homes. That is the cream of the crop when it comes to, you know, rental inventory. Those are not being sold to other investors. You know, those just, they don't pencil anymore. Somebody's had that for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and that's going to go to somebody who is going to move, you know, into the city. That is out of the rental pool. That is gone.
And that's a bummer because that's the opposite of what we should be doing. We want more options for people for housing. We want affordable options for people for housing. But when you make it not affordable, and not a financially sound investment for people to be a landlord, what do you expect? So if you're someone who owns a couple rental units in Seattle, Tacoma, and you're really struggling with, do I sell these things before these tenant protections get out of control, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. You can start by using their home value calculator to see how much your property is worth. It might be worth more than you think. All right, it is Thursday after all. So we're going to check in on what's happening in Florida. I will, for the record, state that this has been pre-recorded, but for good reason.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Hello, Miranda.
Hello.
Yeah, this is you're already in Minnesota.
We taped early. Yes, I will be in Minnesota.
And I'll see you tomorrow in person. But, you know,
I'm so excited.
We had to round out the week here. all right. A couple good stories. There's this new law. It's called Form 6 in Florida that will require even small town. It's specific, really, to small towns and cities, elected officials to disclose their assets. I mean, we're talking about anything over like $1,000. And it turns out that some of these elected officials don't like the idea of having to do that starting January 1st.
Yeah, not just that, but also like their net worth, like how much money they have to their name and their brand. So I don't know how I feel about that, because I feel like $1,000 is a pretty low number, first of all. And it kind of leaves you're already susceptible as like a public figure and an elected official to people publicly who maybe like you or don't like you. And now you got to put like everything you own basically out for everybody to know about. And I just don't think that there's much reason for that.
I don't know. I like the accountability of sort of knowing, okay, how much money and what did you have coming into elected office versus maybe going out of elected office. I do think we need some transparency from elected officials. I don't know if I care about small, you know, city councils where it's like they're volunteering or they're doing it like one night a month. But I agree the $1,000 threshold seems very, very low.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of people don't seem to like it. I mean, even in like this article, I had read about it in St. Peter's Beach, 4 out of 5 elected officials will be resigned by the 1st. So that'll leave that specific city council pretty low in numbers. And then there's dozens more across the state who've already put in their resignation too before this law goes into effect on January 1st.
Yeah, it says there's been a wave of resignations among local elected officials, including 4 to 5 city council members that resigned, that you said. And they're like, we don't want to do this, but we feel like this is government overreach. I agree on the $1,000 threshold, but I do think that there should be some accountability for the assets you have, if anybody's, you know, paying you to influence policy, etc. So that's very, yeah, very interesting. All right. Also, there was a, I feel like sometimes crazy stuff that happens in schools in Washington state is like much different than Florida. But then occasionally it just shows you can't control, even in a state like Florida, you can't control all the wild teachers who have wild lesson ideas. So this is elementary school in Florida. There was a reenactment of the Rosa Parks historical event with the bus, etc. And some parents were pretty disturbed by what their child went through.
Yeah, they got to see photos of their child basically being arrested and restrained by another student who was wearing a police vest. And then also she was fingerprinted with finger paints. And it wasn't elementary. It's preschool, actually.
It's a toddler.
Like it's a toddler. I believe she was 2 years old. And I'm like, first of all, I think that's a little young to be trying to push civil rights teachings on. Like, they're still working through general alphabet and number stuff at that point. And the school kind of made a statement saying this is not part of the curriculum. But like you said, you can't control what individuals decide to do in their classrooms. And it's just like, I want to say horrifying for, like, you know, to overuse that word, but like, come on. Like, I don't even know how to feel about that.
I don't know what adult would think that that is appropriate. And like you said, the kids aren't going to grasp that lesson anyway. It's almost like it was just this teacher wanted to do it. And it also, in addition to, let's say it's a civil rights lesson, whatever, I also think that the way that it was taught to toddlers, it's almost instilling anti-police animus. You know, yes. I mean, like, what the police did to Rosa Parks was horrible. I mean, they were acting, you know, under the law, but in the light of history, it's not good. But now you're kind of putting a toddler through that to get arrested and fingerprinted. It is so insanely bizarre. And the only thing you can do, really, is you can hold teachers accountable. I have much more faith that that will happen in Florida than I do when teachers go off the rails in Washington.
Yeah, I assume that as this story kind of starts making its rounds a little bit more, there'll be a pretty heavy thumb down on the situation down here, because we take our, you know, curriculum and education pretty seriously down here, and almost in some cases overly serious. So I assume that there'll be some repercussions for this specific teacher, and hopefully, you know, those punishments will make other teachers think a little bit better before they start putting their own lessons into practice.
Yeah, just wild stuff. Speaking of wild stuff, Florida firefighter captures 40-pound boa constrictor menacing peafowl in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Which I've never heard of the phrase peafowl. Is that plural for peacocks?
It's peacocks, but, you know, there's other things. Like, you guys have, I believe, pheasants are part of the peafowl family as well.
The more you know.
But down here, they're called peacocks, and they are wild, and they are everywhere. And it took me a few years to realize that they're not just, like, escapees from the zoo, because where we're from, you don't see a peacock unless you go to the zoo. But they're just in the streets. And, yeah, it was menacing a bunch of peacocks. I don't know if the peacocks were being menaced, but there were a bunch of peacocks around, and there was a giant boa constrictor trying to size up one of them for lunch. And a firefighter saved the day, as they always do.
I don't know if that's saving the day, though. Isn't that just the circle of life? Like, you just
it
cost
is,
him
except
his
for
lunch.
The boa constrictor is illegal in these parts. He's an invasive species, so it is part of nature. But because they're on our, you know, our X list, I guess it is saving the day.
Murder list. Okay. It's funny. I always see these firefighters. Usually, it's like, oh, I rescued a kitten from a burning building, and then the firefighters take all these pictures of them resuscitating the little kitten with a little breathe mask, and they put it out there like they don't know what they're doing, you know, getting the women all excited. This one wrangling a snake, I'm not sure that does it for me, because the snake just grosses me out.
I mean, I think it's pretty awesome. It was big. It was 8 feet long, 40 pounds. That's a decent sized snake to just be like slithering through the neighborhood. So
yeah. Take that
better,
thing somewhere else.
Better finding
it
on the road than in somebody's backyard or garage, which is where I'm sure it was heading in these colder temperatures we're experiencing.
Can you imagine killing one of those things and then opening up its stomach and it has a peacock and the peacock comes out alive? It's like, bah-gah.
They're dead by the time they're swallowed.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if it was like a whale situation where you swallow it whole and like the person's alive in the stomach for a little while. I digress. All right, Miranda, very much looking forward to seeing you back home. Good old Fargo. Thanks for being on. And that has been today's edition of Florida Report.
Yes, happy holidays.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, the only way I'd probably go and tackle a snake that big is if it had my dog. If it had my dog, you're dead. You are dead. And that extends beyond snakes, by the way. Any creature hurting my dogs.
I believe it.
Yes. Okay, before we get to, I was just looking at the live stream. Why are you guys giving us so much money today?
Mm, so sweet.
It's so nice. Like, Christmas gifts galore in the live stream. Before we get to some comments from the live stream, there he is. A sane bill being introduced in Olympia. So sane. And I love it. And what he would do is something we have said needs to happen in this state. Maybe they were listening to us, is to teach kids in high school financial literacy. I mean, all this dumb stuff they learn in school, it's like, gosh, give them something valuable and teach them responsibility. And I think that starts with money, and then it gives them self-empowerment and all this stuff. And so the bill that's been proposed by a Republican, but the Democrat state treasurer also supports it. So there's some bipartisan support. It would require in high school before you graduate that you have a half a credit of a financial literacy class. Oh, love it. We thought we'd talk to our own financial expert about the pros and cons of doing this, if there are any cons. So we had Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital come on and react.
I think in general, it's good. And I think that it is extraordinarily needed today. You know, for instance, you know, maybe this is pie in the sky for me, but you know, to get the younger generation to understand even what a deficit is, to understand what it means when you're running $2.1 trillion deficits, to understand how much tax burden is going to fall on them because Janet Yellen didn't term out our debt in longer terms than she, you know, than she did when we had 0% rates. You know, yeah, to understand all of these things, like we were talking about before we came on the air, to even understand how to write a check or what writing a check means. Right. What is that money? I remember as a kid, my mom saying at the store, no, we can't afford that. And I remember looking at her and going, Mom, look at all the checks you have left. Right. Like, write a check, you know. So, I think all kids probably think like that. And, you know, what's interesting, you bring this up. Our good friend Dory Monson and I used to talk about all the time. As soon as he retired from radio, we were going to do financial literacy classes together. For families and things like that. So it's a passion of mine. I'm a firm believer if the average person really, and it's kind of what we try to do on our show to some degree, it's not so much politically aimed, obviously, but financially, trying to explain to people what these things mean, right? Like if you understand what they actually mean, if you understand what's going on, if people knew what was actually going on financially in this country, I am convinced elections would go differently, right? If they understood where this money is coming from, if they right? And I don't think they do. And I think a lot of politicians don't either. So I think it's a great idea. And I think it's something that's sorely needed. My only concern would be, are they going to teach financial literacy as effectively as they teach other subjects? Right. So
which is always the concern.
Right. I mean, maybe we go backwards. You know, I don't know. At the end of the day, it's who's teaching it and what's the curriculum. But I mean, if they're going to teach it like they're teaching sex education these days, I'd say don't waste your time. But yeah, I know. I think it'd be a wonderful thing. And furthermore, I think that I know for a fact, guys like me, and I bet you a lot of other guys in the profession, I'd volunteer to go do it a couple days a month at schools. I'd go speak. I'd go talk in front of the kids. And I think it'd be, especially when you look at all the things we're spending money on, you know, like I think it'd be extremely advantageous.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had when I was in high school. You go through, what do you call it, home ec and stuff, and you learn how to sew a pillow. Couldn't have someone taught me how to invest or save my money or something like that? Had to learn that lesson way too late in life. If you want to check out Zach's weekly radio show, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. At Bulwark Capital Management, they specialize in risk management, which is going to be very important heading into 2024. So if you have not properly managed the risk of your retirement portfolio, check out what they do at Bulwark Capital, knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, let's get to questions, comments from the live stream. Man, you guys are crazy today. Before I get to your generous super chats, a couple comments on the news, on initiatives. Julie Hafen says, Spokane Valley Mall still had signature gatherers there yesterday. Many thanks to them. So if you've not signed, you may still be able to find them. And actually, that's a good note that you bring up, because let me just read this quick. So they are actually, in addition to turning in the two new initiatives today, they're also continuing to add additional signatures for the initiatives that have already been turned in. So for instance, on the initiative to repeal the carbon tax, they turned in another 17,000 signatures today. Like, they're going to be pushing 500,000 on some of these, which Democrats should be terrified. On the parental choice initiative, They turned in another 22,000 today. On the Restore Reasonable Police Pursuits, they turned in another 14,000 today. These initiatives, despite whatever harassment, snitch line, intimidation efforts Democrats tried to pull out, you did it too late. You did it too late. Wasn't enough. So sad. All right, let's see. A couple more on the news. Sally S. said Hobbs is too busy trying to find a way to get Trump off the Washington ballot. I don't think he'd do that, although I did see him comment on it, right? He said he's monitoring the situation. Nancy Brady, keep it up, Brandy. Common sense, profession, proper language, and diction. Were you born in the 40s but look really young? Oh, you think I look young? I do have good enunciation.
You do. Thank you. I forget to unmute me.
I'm very proud of my enunciation.
Yes.
On going back home, which I'm leaving tomorrow to go back to Fargo, Minnesota, Sharon says, Brandy going to buy the house around at the Liquor Pig. This is like an old inside joke where I called into Dory's show because I used to call in every week before he passed away. And I happened to be outside a liquor store in Minnesota called the Liquor Pig.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him like I'm at a place called the Liquor Pig. And when he let me off the air, he said something about, that's Brandy Cruz, Liquor Pig. And so he did, it's like, what? You know what's sad is I got, I bought Dory a koozie from the Liquor Pig. It's bright pink and it has a pig on it. It says the Liquor Pig, Minnesota. I never got to give it to him.
Oh,
I never got to give it to him.
That should be in here somewhere too.
All right, I've got to get to your guys' crazy super chats. You guys are being so sweet on the super chats today. I'm going to read them. Matthew Cook, he gave us two. A $5 super chat. He said, Merry Christmas, Brandy, Nicole, and Dee. And to everyone in our great undivided community, cheers. And then he gave another 50 and said, and a happy new year. Which
so
we appreciate.
Sweet.
Bill Biz with a $100 super chat. Brandy and Nicole, a little extra support for the show. It's great to see both of you working together on this much-needed Voice of Reason podcast. I'm sure Dory is smiling. Merry Christmas to you and your families. Miranda and Daryl, too. Thank you. Jay, with a $99.99 super chat, says, Happy Holidays. Country Guy, with a $25 super chat. Happy Holidays to Brandy and Nicole. Thanks for being a sane alternative voice. Isn't it sad that, like, the sane voices are the alternative?
Right.
Can we make the sane voices loud enough where they're the mainstream and the crazy ones get to be the alternative? Let's see. GTB00 Guma Gojo Jack with a $19.99 super chat. Jason M with a $100 super chat. Merry Christmas. I'm with Bill. I'm glad you guys are all working together. Cheers. Oh, and hi, Nicole. Wink.
Hi, Jason.
Diana Manning with a $25 super chat. Merry Christmas. Sally with a $25 super chat. Merry Christmas to Brandy, Nicole, and Dee. Nicole's cat giving us $9.99. Happy holidays to the best duo. Sincerely, Batman and Robin. Nicole, thanks for employing my mom. My catnip can get expensive. And thanks for Matt Gilbert's one joke every day. Hilarious. Cheers. Tracy with a $50 super chat. Merry Christmas, Brandy, Nicole, and Dee. Miranda, enjoy your time off of family. H with a $20 super chat. Merry Christmas and God bless. Oh my gosh, you guys, this is crazy. This is like $1,000. Jill C. says with a $19.99 super chat, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to all. My New Year's resolution is to not miss one single show as I've been able to do this year.
Wow.
Vicky Berg, that's awesome. With a $20 super chat, Merry Christmas, Brandy, Nicole, and Dee, all the undivided fam. You've all kept me sane. Thank you. Son Miller with a $20 super chat. Merry Christmas. Looking forward to the new year. And Crafty Grandma Crispy, we did get your Christmas card. Thank you very much. That was very sweet. It says Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. You guys are wild. Do I have to, like,
so
since those were Christmas gifts,
spirit.
Do I have to, like, divvy that up then?
I think you probably should.
That's probably how they were intended. So I'll add that up and I'll divvy it up amongst the team.
Too funny.
All right. That was really fun,
you
guys.
Thank you
all.
Thank you all. For
letting
us do
this. Oh my gosh. Seriously.
So sweet.
It is so sweet. We're so grateful. And maybe we should talk a little bit before we do our closing sanity check about what's to come in the new year.
Yeah.
So first next week, we are going to, I know that you guys are going to be between Christmas and New Year's, but we didn't want to cancel shows entirely because we're heading into an important legislative session and we just cannot do that. So what we're going to be doing is during our regular shows next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we are going to have truncated shows that are going to focus on a single policy issue that's at stake next year, from the Climate Commitment Act to crime to the initiatives. And so if you watch that week of shows next week, you're going to be the smartest person at your office and your friend group when it comes to knowing what's about to happen in 2024. So that is the goal, is to get you all set up so when we get back in the new year, we can hit the ground running with a legislative session. Also,
you know what to root for.
Also, we are going to be adding a Friday show in the new year. So the Friday show during the legislative session is going to be shorter. It's going to be specific to the legislative session. So we will have a show every Friday that's going to be covering what happened that week in the legislature. So you can, again, be fully informed heading into the weekend. It will be short on a Friday, 20 minutes or so. And then after the legislative session is over, that show will transform into an election year 2024 Friday special every week.
I like it.
By popular demand, people are like, we want something on Fridays. We want something on Fridays. But I'm like, you probably don't want a full hour on Fridays. Let's make it specific. Let's keep people informed. Let's keep the election front of mind. So we got lots of great stuff coming up next year.
Yeah. Keep all the good tips and ideas coming, because we get a lot from you.
Oh, so much. We've gotten some of our best stories this year from all of you. So we will not be live next week, but we'll have content for you every day next week. We will not be missing any Sunday shows, because we do not miss Sundays with subscribers. There'll be a regular show this week that's going to be absolutely fantastic, talking about transparency, artificial intelligence. We'll also have a show which is on New Year's Eve, I think the Sunday after. With all of that, let's get to our closing sanity check. And my closing sanity check, since it's the last time I'm going to talk to you guys live in 2023, is a thank you. It is a thank you for keeping me sane. I, in doing this job, feel like every day I'm going to rip my hair out. I look at some of what's happening in politics, nationally and locally, online, the political discourse, how absolutely destructive it is. And then I come into this setting, we get to talk about stories that aim to give common sense, people and ideas, a louder voice, and I get to sit here and read comments from all of you that show me that we are not alone, that there are more of us than there are of them, that Team Sanity is going to prevail. And so you guys, every single day when I'm losing hope, you bring that hope right back, and it keeps me doing this job. I know it drives Nicole as well. And so my closing sanity check for the year really is just a huge thank you to those of you who believe in this mission, who understand this mission, and who are trying to expand this mission to give common sense a comeback every single day. We'll see you next week on our legislative shows, and we'll see you in the new year with a expanded lineup. Very excited. If you haven't supported the show already, heading into 2024 is not a bad time. UndividedPod.com. You can support our work in the new year for just $5 a month.